Highbridge, a division of Recorded Books, presents Fiber, the Coming Tech Revolution, and Why America Might Miss It, by Susan Crawford. Read by Colleen Marlowe. Chapter 1. The Fiber Future. Here is the tech revolution America may miss. On a gray, cloudy weekday morning in August, I drove across the wide Han River that divides the northern and southern parts of Seoul. I turned east onto a furiously busy highway that runs alongside the river. I was noticing everything at once. The enormous pale forests of concrete apartment blocks. Each forest pointed in a seemingly random direction. Each building labeled with a number. The traffic, and the Lotte Group Tower ahead of me. The tallest building in South Korea. Narrowing to bat-like ears at its top, it had been the CEO's dream to build the tallest tower in the country. But the structure is roundly disliked, and sinkholes have started opening at its base. The traffic in Seoul is crushing and constant, an oppressive fact of life for the 10 million impatient citizens of that booming metropolis. After a few minutes, a huge concrete stadium with fading Olympic rings decorating its side came into view. This was the Seoul Olympic Stadium, built for the 1988 Summer Olympics, but not used for a major world sporting event since then. I drove on, and the forests of apartment towers and the crushing traffic continued for another 20 minutes, but then fell away, and I was in the suburbs and heading toward the mountains. I had been on many journeys over the previous 5 years, interviewing hundreds of people in Stockholm, Seoul, Tokyo, Singapore, Berlin, Amsterdam, Copenhagen, and Havana, as well as in a long list of U.S. cities, about the possible effects on human lives of virtually unlimited, cheap, ubiquitous communications capacity. This was my third trip to Seoul. I had come to see what South Korea, the most wired nation on the planet, would show the world when it hosted the 2018 Winter Olympics, 6 months away. My destination that morning was a rural, hilly area 3 hours east of Seoul, about 95 miles away, a small town of some 30,000 people called Pyeongchang. There was no way to get there other than by driving. Although a high-speed rail link between Seoul and Pyeongchang was being built that would make a one-hour trip possible, the line hadn't been completed. No one knew how expensive the rail tickets would be, and these calculations mattered. There weren't enough hotel rooms in Pyeongchang for the anticipated 75,000 fans, even though buildings to house visitors were hastily being thrown up near the event venues, and older structures were being pressed into new roles as hotels. Many Olympics enthusiasts would have to make a daily round trip by train from Seoul, a gigantic place with 30,000 hotel rooms. There is no housing to speak of between Seoul and Pyeongchang, and the Pyeongchang Olympic Hockey Center and Ice Arena can hold up to 22,000 spectators. And so I found myself driving east of Seoul on a brand new 4-lane freeway, specially built for the upcoming Olympics. I checked my phone. My 4G coverage throughout the 3-hour trip was spectacular. The ice track ahead of you slopes steeply down and curves sharply to the right and out of view. And then you're off, at unimaginably high speed, slamming into the banks of the track and zipping forcibly around every curve, while you keep an eye on the stopwatch and the heart rate indicator projected on the top right corner of your view. You are seeing and hearing a bobsled run. Your stomach is convinced you yourself are hunkered down in the body of the streamlined bobsled, from the perspective of your favorite athlete, a young man from Seoul who is a luge prodigy, and hopes with his team to snag the gold medal for his country. Seconds later, you're in the virtual company of your friends, chatting away, they're all around you. The bobsled, meanwhile, is taking an alarming turn, high up on the side of the track, to gain crucial momentum for the end of the run, and you and your buddies, sitting in your living rooms or standing on street corners, have been granted your favorite athlete's point of view and insight into his climbing heart rate. You collectively hold your breath. Will he win? Later that day, you visit the ice arena to see the high-pressure couples' ice dancing competition. You are still in your living room in Seoul, but it doesn't feel like it. You can see every corner of the arena from any one of 100 cameras. Your view moving easily around the enormous building with its sky-blue seats and bright digital displays. As your attention wanders to the VIP boxes, you miss a crucial dance moment. The roar of the crowd brings you back and you quickly speak, asking for a replay. The replay you are instantly shown allows you to see the ice dancer's perfectly choreographed jump and to freeze the image, leaving both dancers above the ice, graceful and eternal. You move the skaters backward and forward a few times to see how they got to that height, before smoothly, slowly, allowing them to continue their flawless joint routine. You marvel at their skill, and the image you see is so detailed and seems so real that you feel you could touch the woman's silk sleeve and feel the thinness of the fabric. That evening, the visitors to the events who have made the physical trek out to the Olympic venues, not you because you are still at home in your living room in Seoul, ride around the city in an aquamarine bus. On the side of the bus, bold white letters read, "World's first 5G connected car." The Olympic visitors touch the windows of the bus and write with their fingers, interacting with displays showing them live coverage of the Olympic events around them. A man with a long white cane suddenly walks right in front of the bus. The bus has no driver. The riders realize the pedestrian is blind and feel powerless to do anything about the collision that is about to happen. But the bus, guided by tsunamis of data running over 5G networks, smoothly rolls around him, avoiding an accident. The riders turn back to bantering with their personalized window displays, sometimes the face of a guide, sometimes a map, sometimes text, whatever they're interested in. And when they go inside the physical arenas, their smartphones speak softly to them about where they are in relation to their ticketed seats and where snacks are being sold. Late at night, stirred by the bravery and heart of the athletes you've seen and whose perspectives you've shared, you walk around Seoul. You're interested in knowing more about your favorite athlete. You want to hear from him about his childhood dreams, and Seoul is having a special digital event in his honor. Wearing glasses that allow you to see digital overlays on physical objects, you are fascinated by the stories told by the buildings that were part of the athlete's past. You're touched by the connections to your own life and delighted by the digital scenarios and jokes your favorite athlete has left for you to enjoy. Welcome to the future, the first hints of which were visible at the Winter Olympics of February 2018 in Pyeongchang. Korea Telecom, KT, unveiled its very high-capacity but very short-range 5G wireless communications network, at least 10 times faster than 4G, to the world during those games, so South Koreans really could be part of speed skating or ski jumping events from the perspectives of the athletes involved, and ride autonomous buses on an 88-acre test site, the world's biggest. It was a major collaboration. The enormous South Korean company Samsung and Hyundai, together with Intel and Ericsson, committed to the enterprise and built hardware to handle the flood of data moving around the Olympic venues before a global standard for 5G communications, not expected until 2020, even existed. South Korea simply wanted to be first. And South Koreans with 5G-enabled devices were the most engaged sports fans on the planet during those Olympics. They could see and hear anything they chose in real time from any angle, including the athlete's view, while surrounded by their friends and other South Koreans as fellow commentators. Interactive holographic projections, along with augmented reality, the digital overlay made possible with glasses or smartphones or interactive bus windows, allowed for new forms of engagement. KT's 360 virtual reality technology made viewers feel as if they were right there in the stadium, no matter where they actually were. And its time-slice technology allowed watchers to roll these visuals back and forth at will. The Seoul traffic, the distance, and the lack of hotel rooms were less of an issue, as was the incomplete state of the Seoul-Pyeongchang high-speed rail link. Except for the self-driving bus, which has to be physically experienced, anyone in Seoul with a 5G-enabled handset could have a real-time experience of the Olympic Games that was much the same as what those actually present had, minus the crowds. What makes these astonishing feats of communications transport possible? Floods of data flowing back and forth from an athlete to millions of fans and back, without an instant of hesitation, is South Korea's extensive fiber optic network. The country is wired with 375,000 miles of fiber optic cables, formed of hair-thin filaments of unbelievably pure synthetic glass, which channel light across the many miles between rural Pyeongchang and homes and businesses in the rest of the country. Son Jin-oh, the cheerful, bespectacled Director General of the Technology Bureau for the Pyeongchang Organizing Committee for the 2018 Olympic Games, told me that fiber serves as a basic infrastructure for telecommunication services in Korea. To beef up the fiber capacity in rural Pyeongchang and the nearby coastal town of Gyeongyong, Korea Telecom added thousands of additional fiber strands in the area. All the TV cameras broadcasting the Olympics had direct fiber connections that allowed them to integrate and upload data simultaneously. KT did the same at thousands of other physical locations, providing sensors to which data was sent across very short distances over the air using KT's 5G wireless network. Think tiny, tiny cell towers receiving and sending a ton of data for short distances, without fiber optic lines connected to those tiny cell towers. 5G doesn't work. South Korea has this amazing fiber optic connectivity because years ago its government, still rising from the rubble of the Korean War and urged on by the giant electronics conglomerate Samsung, decided that world-class data networks would be key to the future success of the country. KT and other telecom companies were urged, through a combination of subsidies, tax breaks, and low-cost loans, to upgrade to fiber optic connections. In his Next Generation Connectivity Report from 2010, my colleague, Yochai Benkler, wrote that South Korea had invested $24 billion in its first transition on connecting schools and government centers in the 1990s, over $70 billion in low-cost loans to providers, and over $12 billion per year from 2004 to 2007 on its transition to the next generation ubiquitous fiber network. He noted that it was unclear who exactly spent the money, public authorities or private companies. But the results have been dazzling. South Koreans take virtually unlimited, cheap connectivity, both uploads, performing, and downloads, consuming, for granted. And the country is now poised to have advanced wireless services that are possible only because fiber optic cables run to just about every home and business in the country. As Mr. Oh solemnly told me the day I visited, in August 2017, through the Olympics, we are preparing thoroughly to show to the world what cutting-edge telecommunications services we have in Korea. In the United States, we have fiber optic cables between cities called long-haul or backbone lines, and within any metro area of significant size, there are middle-mile or business data services fiber optic lines. These cables often connect to telephone poles or other network elements, but don't go all the way to retail customers' premises. What Korea, Japan, Hong Kong, China, Singapore, and the Nordic countries have that the rest of the world does not are fiber optic cables running physically, directly into neighborhoods, homes, and businesses in both rural and urban areas, the so-called last-mile network. Inventors have found ways to encode stunning amounts of information on pulses of light vibrating billions of times a second, and then send that light on its journey through a channel made of the purest glass on Earth. If the information-carrying capacity of copper wire is like a 2-inch-wide pipe, fiber optic is like a river 15 miles wide. You wouldn't even try to download a 4K movie using a copper connection, but using fiber, you could download 10 movies in a second, or run your own business remotely, or see your doctor or members of your family when needed, as needed. Most of the phone calls going on throughout the world at any moment could be carried simultaneously across a single hair-thin strand of fiber. But because people send and receive information from where they physically are, fiber optic cables need to be physically distributed to reach individual buildings in order for fiber's capacity across all the parts of the network, middle mile, long haul, and undersea cables linking continents, to be fully harnessed. In many developed countries, that last mile is the weakest link in the network. Its materials, copper or coaxial cable, serving to throttle communications just as they are starting on their journeys from individuals to the rest of the world, and slowing incoming data just as it is about to arrive in those individuals' lives. Once the fiber cable reaches an individual living unit, that is, a home, data can be sent over the air to devices we wear or hold in our hands. The plan is for 5G wireless to allow for the sending of enormous amounts of data over the air across very short distances, to reach humans, handsets, sensors, or anything else capable of receiving or transmitting data. Because the last mile has to connect to individual buildings, it is also the most expensive part of any communications network to install. Most of that expense, perhaps 80% of it, is the high fixed costs of the labor needed to dig up streets or attach fiber optic wire to poles and buildings, and revenue will not flow in to cover those costs until the last mile is actually in use. Just like electricity or water service, last mile communications networks are often called a natural monopoly. Those high fixed installation costs mean that it simply does not make economic sense for two separate fiber cables to be attached to any given location. To avoid allowing the resulting natural monopoly position to be used to extract unreasonably high fees from subscribers, telecommunications regulators often require that the basic communications line be made available on a wholesale, price-controlled basis to competing retail providers. Back to the 2018 Olympics. The fiber optic lines very close to the locations where Olympic athletes in Pyeongchang wore cameras and microphones allowed them to beam information about their experiences across the airwaves by way of 5G connections to the installed fiber. Fiber can carry a virtually unlimited amount of data at the speed of light, so all those cameras and tiny cell towers surrounding the athletes and self-driving buses picked up on their movements and perceptions, were able to spew data to their heart's content. All of that local last-mile fiber in Pyeongchang and Gangneung is connected to the existing intercity fiber optic lines running to Seoul and elsewhere in South Korea. Think highway system with interstate freeways acting as long-haul networks, local highways acting as middle-mile connections, and residential roads and driveways playing the role of the last mile. That final segment, made up of those last-mile fiber connections, is what allowed everyone in any South Korean living room with a 5G handset to be present at the Olympics, with virtually zero delay between an athlete's gesture in Pyeongchang and the perception of that gesture 95 miles away in Seoul. Latency, a word used for delay, has been reduced to about 1 millisecond across this connection. Humans love zero latency. We are genuinely bugged by delay between our touch of a key and the reaction of a remote computer hundreds of miles away to that touch, just as we are put off by delay in human interactions. In the United States, we cannot even imagine cheap, unlimited communications capacity in our homes. Because of decades of political maneuvering by the enormous private companies that sell internet access to American consumers, a lack of leadership at the federal level, and the invisibility of this entire policy area, we have failed to make the upgrade to cheap last-mile fiber connectivity. We suffer from a whole series of digital divides as a country. On the global stage, there is a deep and widening divide between the United States on the one hand and Japan, South Korea, Singapore, Hong Kong, and China on the other. Those places where fiber now reaches or soon will reach all residents are where new industries and new ways of making a living are likely to emerge first. We also suffer from huge digital divides between richer and poorer Americans that will make inequality worse and weaken the fabric of democracy. These infrastructure divides are driving wedges between rural and urban Americans and between white and non-white Americans. all the policies important to us as a country, becoming the most advanced healthcare nation in the world, the most energy efficient, the most innovative, the most resilient, depend on having last-mile fiber and advanced wireless services available cheaply to everyone. We must do better. Fiber optic as a category is both old and new. The cables running under the oceans and among the major cities of the world began to be upgraded to fiber 30 years ago. And once a fiber optic cable is in the ground, it lasts for 40 or 50 years. It is essentially future-proof, because its information-carrying capacity can be almost infinitely upgraded without digging up the cable, merely by swapping out the electronics that encode and power the pulses of light that travel within its walls. Most people in non-fiber countries, including the United States, can't even buy what in fibered countries counts as a standard modern internet connection. About 11 million American households, out of 126 million total, are connected to last-mile fiber, and that service is usually available only at very high prices from a single unregulated provider. Meanwhile, South Korea, Japan, Hong Kong, and Singapore have virtually 100% fiber adoption at low prices and often scores of competitors. This is a big problem. Here's why. Those hair-thin fiber strands, capable of carrying billions of phone calls simultaneously, plus advanced wireless communications that depend on that fiber extending into the last mile, will make possible virtually unlimited cheap communications capacity wherever you are, which in turn will give rise to new businesses, new transport capabilities, new ways of managing our use of energy, new forms of education and healthcare, new ways of earning a living, and new forms of human connectedness. For these things to happen, both fiber and advanced wireless technologies need to be widely and competitively available. Without these basic pieces of open infrastructure in place, your country will be missing out on the future being lived and built elsewhere. Much of the world gets this. China is installing 20,000 last-mile fiber optic connections every single day. In June 2017, the South China Morning Post reported, China set to build the planet's largest 5G mobile network for $180 billion U.S. dollars. Listen to that, the planet's largest. Fiber plus advanced wireless capability is essential to the next phase of human existence as electricity was 100 years ago. Just as countries that quickly ensured cheap access to electricity revolutionized their economies and provided dramatically improved quality of life for their citizens, countries that figure out how to get fiber to everyone will have ever-increasing advantages over those that do it slowly. Take the 2018 Olympics in South Korea. Korea Telecom was smart to focus on sports, and the Olympics in particular, in demonstrating its prowess. Sports grab humans in real-time emotional ways, and the Olympics marked the global pinnacle of inspiring athletic achievement. KT got the world's attention in 2018. But KT's display of its 5G fireworks is far more significant than any Olympic event could possibly be. Korea is going through a phase change in digital communications that has implications for almost every occupation and source of economic power of which we're aware today. In the crowded city of Seoul, for example, I met many 20-somethings who did not distinguish between online life and real life. For them, these are simply layers of life as a whole. This generation is so accustomed to cheap, unlimited connectivity everywhere that they have forgotten its existence, just as people in other countries forget the existence of electricity until it is suddenly not there. South Koreans are impatient. For them, going to almost any city in the United States is a little like going off the grid. In Seoul, I met Yong Sung Choi, a professional e-sports player who is as famous in his sport as Lionel Messi, the best goal scorer in the world, is in soccer. Yong Sung, who now works as a coach for the SK Telecom T1 StarCraft II team. Telecommunications companies are major investors in the e-sports industry in Korea. told me he'd lived through the transformation of Korea that took place following the installation of high-capacity networks that permitted any number of people to play games simultaneously. At age 20, he realized he could beat just about anyone. The essential factor in connectivity, he says, is latency, or response time. Any delay makes it very difficult to play. Some players say latency starts to become obvious when there is a gap of 150 milliseconds or even less between pressing a button and visual response. Fiber connections generally have lower latency than cable or copper wires. In Korea, the response time is really short, he said, laughing. He sees a bright future for the gaming industry in Korea, but there is much more than gaming. The same technology will revolutionize business, medicine, education, manufacturing, energy use, and real-time translation functions between spoken languages. Fiber is also revolutionizing cities themselves. Because the city of Seoul years ago installed fiber optic last-mile connections throughout the city and its subway system, it can provide free Wi-Fi, which means the private sector can experiment with Internet of Things, IoT services, that will improve its citizens' lives. On the same trip that had me clamoring around the empty ice arena in Pyeongchang, I visited the city's IoT testbed office. Taejin Kim, director of the testbed, told me that the city is testing its ability to provide personalized services to elders, to provide data from road surfaces and public transit so that navigation systems function well, and in general, to solve urban problems wherever they are. The conference room next to the mayor's office houses an enormous dashboard that, fed by public data, allows the mayor to see the site of an accident or fire, talk in real time to public officials at the site, visually understand traffic congestion, and manage the city's budget. Because fiber is everywhere, this enormous amount of data can be shipped whenever and wherever it is needed. The next wave of applications making use of fiber and advanced wireless services is likely to be in healthcare, education, or other fundamental areas that has been seen so far in Korea and Japan. I am confident that innovative American businesses will come up with services that use much more significant amounts of bandwidth when there is a critical mass of users with capacity. If and when the United States becomes a last-mile fiber sandbox for this inventiveness, the huge market here will drive those developments. We will also support our commitment to genuine liberal democracy, the rising tide of cheap, ubiquitous, unlimited connectivity needs to reach everyone in order for the country as a whole to thrive. This same virtuous cycle of innovation happened with electricity more than 100 years ago. In 1907, when just a small part of life in the United States had been electrified, mostly street lamps and streetcars, appliance makers had little incentive to manufacture mass-market devices that used electricity, because the adoption of domestic electricity was minimal. During the 1920s, America's private utilities were focused on the enormous profits to be made in industrial electrical modernization. Not until the Great Depression weakened that industrial sector did they pivot toward domestic electricity. It was hard at the time to imagine why vast amounts of electricity would be needed in daily life. Some houses were wired for lighting, but not for general electricity use, and appliances initially were plugged into light bulb sockets. Wall switches at an entrance were considered a luxury. Nonetheless, according to David Nye in his 1990 book, Electrifying America, the introduction of electric lights in the homes of the very wealthy was an entering wedge into home use of electricity, prompting appliance makers to think of other devices that could be plugged into the network, which eventually, in turn, motivated mass electrification. Manufacturers introduced electric irons, toasters, vacuum cleaners, electric washers, hot plates, and many other labor-saving devices. The electric fan was a big success. Electricity use soared, creating a need for additional capacity and the business case for building it. Electrical apps proved not only that usage would justify further build-out, but that a model based on affordability and mass consumption was feasible. This app-based wisdom prompted federal investment in projects like a traveling exhibition of farm equipment in rural areas, a sort of agricultural circus that reached about 1 million farmers in 26 states between 1939 and 1941, and the provision...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?